Chapter 3 Merin 1 The monks taught that wind was the voice of the Almighty. The storms were his fury, a tempest to remind of his omnipotent will. The gentle breezes were his love, a calm reminder that he was watching and that he cared for those below. From his haze of near wakefulness, Merin could feel the wind blowing across his face. Despite the slight pounding in his head, he lay peacefully, letting the wind soothe him. Wherever he had gone in life, the wind had been his companion. It had blown over his back as he worked the fields back in Alethkar. It had ruffled his cloak as he marched across lonely stormlands in Prala. It had been behind his spear as he fought in the king's army. At times, Merin thought he could feel the presence of the Almighty, that he could hear the wind before it arrived. Then he knew that he was not alone. Someone was watching over him. He took a deep breath, then opened his eyes. The tent ceiling overhead was unexpected. He groaned slightly, propping himself up. He lay on a comfortable mat in a large open-sided tent. He recognized it. He had helped put it up on several occasions. It was the healer's tent. But he was on the wrong side. He wasn't lying with the regular soldiers, but was instead on a special pallet over in the...
Merin!
A voice exclaimed. Merin turned as a couple of figures approached, smiling. Ren, Sanus, and Vezin were spearmen from his squad, spearmen like himself, who had come from small tenth villages in rural Alethkar. As they approached, Merin sensed a hesitance in their faces.
Are you feeling better, my lord?
Sanus asked as the men paused beside Merin's pallet just inside the tent. Merin frowned.
Lord, who are you?
Then he saw it. Sitting at the end of his cot, lying across the top of a cloth-wrapped package, a shard blade. It came back to him. He had been on the battlefield in his formation. Orders had come from the generals to divide the enemy troops, splitting them along the fissure created by the king's honor guard. Merin's squad had fought on the eastern internal flank, pushing the enemy back, making way for their towers to roll forward. Then he had come. The martial force that every spearman feared, yet every spearman dreamed of defeating. A shard-bearer. Riding a massive war stallion, his armor unadorned, the man had cut through the Aleth ranks with ease, slaughtering footmen, batting away spears. That blade had cut the tip from Merin's own weapon as it passed, leaving him with a useless stub. The soldier standing beside him had died with an almost casual swipe of the shard-bearer's weapon. Merin had watched the king's horse die from a single blow. He had seen his squad scattering in fear before the deadly blade. And he had run. Dropping his broken spear, he had dashed forward and...
By the winds, Merin mumbled. That has to be the stupidest thing I've ever done. It worked, though, Ren said quietly, looking toward the end of the mat.
Merin paused. He can't be saying what I think he's saying. It can't be. Merin slowly pulled the blanket off his legs and knelt before the sword, ignoring the pain in his head. He reached forward tentatively, running his fingers along the blade. It was enormous, almost as long as a footman's spear. The weapon glistened silvery, but the design of the metal made it seem as if it were crafted from thousands of small quartz gemstones. Four intricate glyphs were etched into the blade, subtly created by the orientation of the quartz pattern. Merin trailed off. It was his. He grabbed the handle with suddenly eager fingers, hefting the blade.
Wow, he mumbled. It's a lot heavier than I thought it would be. The stories always say shard blades are light.
Of course, it was a lot lighter than a weapon its size would normally have been. Even with 2 years of spearman's training, Marin probably wouldn't have been strong enough to lift such a massive weapon if it had been constructed of normal steel. The shard blade was heavy, but no heavier than a regular sword.
"Here," he said, turning to the others, "try it."
The three spearmen didn't move.
"What?"
Marin asked.
"You're not supposed to let anyone else hold your blade, my lord,"
Saunas said.
"They told us to wait here until you awakened to make sure nothing happened to the blade. Now that you're up, we're supposed to go back to the squad camp."
Marin moved to stand.
"I'll go with you. It would be good to see everyone."
The three exchanged awkward glances.
If you want to, my lord,"
Saunas said. Marin paused. Even the normally enthusiastic Wren seemed reserved. They were obviously happy to see him awake, but they were still uncomfortable.
"Maybe I'll just wait here," Marin said.
The three smiled.
"You're a lord now, Marin," Saunas explained.
"A fifth lord.
You don't belong with spearmen. But, well, you give us hope. It's good to know someone made it, after all the talk and stories."
"Everyone in the army heard about you," Wren said eagerly. "You saved the king's life.
Old Captain Tunak wasn't very happy when you got the blade instead, but what's he going to do about it, eh?
My lord?"
The short man chuckled. The three stood awkwardly for a moment. Then they bowed and left. Marin watched them go, fingers still resting on the hilt of the shard blade. "You're a lord now." It was unfathomable. Outside, he could see signs of the camp breaking down. No wonder his friends needed to return. Deconstructing camp was an enormous task, and every hand was needed. Marin turned, motioning toward a healer. The aging man looked up, then quickly rushed over to Marin's mat.
"Yes, my lord?"
he asked. His sleeves and clothing were speckled with blood, and his posture was tired.
Yes, Marin said.
How exactly did one speak like a lord, anyway?
"Why are we breaking down camp?"
"The traitor is dead, my lord,"
the healer explained, eager to help, despite his obvious weariness.
"As is the Prowlin King. The war is ours. Lord Elokar plans to march on Orinja before the day is out."
Over. They had known it would end this day, one way or another. Captain Tunak had said this would probably be Perlir's last stand.
"Are you feeling better, my lord?"
the healer asked.
"You took a strong blow to the head and slept all through the night. You woke a few times, but you were dazed and incoherent."
"I don't remember that," Marin confessed.
"My head hurts a little bit, but I think I'm all right."
"Might I recommend a little more rest, my lord?"
the man asked. Marin glanced toward the camp. Everyone had something to do. It felt wrong to sleep when everyone was so busy.
"Am I allowed to leave?" Marin asked.
"Of course, my lord. Just don't do anything too strenuous, and check back with the healers at the end of the day."
Marin nodded, and the healer withdrew. As the man left, however, Marin realized something.
"Healer," he called.
The elderly healer turned, eyebrow raised.
"Yes, my lord?"
"What is it I'm supposed to do?
As a lord, I mean."
"I'm not sure, my lord,"
the man said with amusement.
"Perhaps that would be a question best asked of another lord."
"Good idea,"
Marin said, climbing out of his bed. He was a bit dizzy as he stood, but the wave passed quickly. He reached over and picked up the shard blade, then regarded the package underneath.
"Your shard plate, my lord,"
the healer explained helpfully.
"I can send some packmen for it if you wish."
"Yes, that will be wonderful," Marin said.
He stepped outside the tent, standing in the morning light, and stopped. Now what? He thought for a moment, then glanced down at his shard blade. There was one thing he'd always wondered. He walked over to a large boulder, then raised the blade and thrust it into the stone. The ballads had exaggerated a bit. The shard blade didn't cut through stone like the breezes cut the air. There was a resistance to his pushing, but with a small amount of effort he was able to slide the blade into the boulder up to its hilt. Merrin pulled the blade free, looking down at it with wonder. He backed up, hefting the blade up over his shoulder, and swung with a mighty two-handed blow. The blade sheared through the middle of the boulder, as if the momentum somehow increased the weapon's sharpness, and whipped out the other side to slice clean through one of the healing tent's support poles. The tent lurched slightly, one side drooping. Healers and patients alike looked out at a sheepish Merrin, who lowered his shard blade.
Sorry,
he called, before blushing and hurrying away. Still, the exhilaration of the moment did not pass. He finally let himself believe what had happened. He was a shard bearer. He outranked a good 3/4 of the noble population. Only the lords of independent cities and their heirs were of a higher stature than shard bearers. To capture a blade on the field of battle, it was the dream of every lowly footman. It was the possibility that spawned stories, the hope that gave normal men the courage to face a shard bearer despite their bleak chances of success. But it had happened to Merrin. His enthusiasm dulled slightly, however, as he reached the camp's main thoroughfare. To his right, in the distance, he could see the white and blue banner marking Zircon 10 Squad, his home of the last 3 years. A home to which he could not return. He looked down at the blade. It was awkward to carry with its incredible length and super-sharp edge. It glistened in the sunlight, its quartz-like patterns shimmering. Apparently they would fade over time. The markings were a manifestation of the bond the sword had had with its master, a man who was now dead. He couldn't return to Zircon 10 Squad, but that was only a manifestation of a larger issue. What of home? What of Stonemount with its fields and simple farmers? No shard-bearers lived in small tribute villages. The ballads said they were needed at the sides of their lords, to go to war or to duel for honor. He would never be able to return to Stonemount. But he had no lordly family to honor and protect. He no longer had a place. Not really a citizen, but not really a lord either. Not really a lord at all. Merrin knew all the songs, from the Chronicle of the First Return to the Storms of Summer. He wasn't a man like those in the stories. He was a boy who had acted without thought. His rescuing of the king had been done out of reflex and luck, not out of heroism. He hadn't even really killed the enemy shard-bearer, only distracted him. "This shouldn't be mine," Merrin thought. "Surely someone will realize that." He looked up, turning from Zircon 10 Squad's tents and looking to the northern side of the camp, toward the tents of the noblemen. He would find his answers there. He began walking through the camp. Men bustled around him, collapsing tents, carrying supplies, packing equipment. Once he would have been befuddled by the enormous number of people. Stonemount was a tenth city, a village of less than 500 people. The tens of thousands that comprised the king's army had amazed him. Over time, however, the amazing had become mundane. He passed massive chulls, rested within their pens, the sound of crunching rock buds echoing from within their boulder-like shells. Dark-eyed Coven tribesmen watched him as he passed, speaking to each other in their rumbling language. Soldiers yelled and barked, giving and receiving orders, preparing for the movement of a beast larger even than the chulls, the army itself. It was a mass of swarming men, every one of whom seemed to have a purpose. Everyone but Marin. The nobleman's section wound around several hills which provided seclusion from both regular soldiers and high storms. The lords each camped with their own entourage, depending on their rank and power. Here the tents became more colorful and the banners bore stylized, sometimes unrecognizable, glyphs instead of just simple colored stripes. Marin paused. The glyphs represented houses, like the Shelf glyph that the one noble family in Stonemount had used, but these were unfamiliar to Marin. Who should he ask for help? The tents were being collapsed, falling flat like squashed winter mushrooms. The workers were mostly soldiers. Nearby, he could see a small group of noblemen, distinguished by their dyed cloaks and sea-silk clothing, watching the proceedings. Marin approached them uncertainly. He was a nobleman now, so he probably shouldn't bow. What then? Call out a greeting? The lords noticed him before he made up his mind, their conversation falling silent. Beneath their disapproving stares, Marin was suddenly aware of his own clothing, simple tan trousers and shirt stained from several years of use beneath his armor.
"Is that a shard blade you hold, boy?"
one of the lords asked. He was a tall man with long dark hair and a haughty, peaked face.
"It is," Marin said. "Who did you take it from, boy?"
the lord asked, stepping forward with a curious eye. Marin took a step backward, grip tightening on the hilt of his sword.
"I was given it by order of the king," he informed him, "on the battlefield yesterday."
The nobleman frowned, pausing. He studied Marin more closely.
"Ah, yes, I recognize you now."
Then he simply snorted and turned back to his companions. The four men continued their discussion as if Marin wasn't even there.
"Excuse me,"
Marin asked, breaking into their conversation. The lead nobleman turned again, eyebrow raised.
"What do you want, boy?"
Marin flushed.
"I'm just not certain what I should do," he said. "Everybody's preparing to leave. What's my place?" "You can go help pack my tent if you wish,"
the nobleman said, waving indifferently toward a group of soldiers working a short distance away. Marin flushed again. Conditioning told him he should simply take the insult, but it seemed wrong to say nothing.
"I don't think you should speak to me like that," Marin said slowly. "Doesn't this blade make me a lord, like you?"
The nobleman raised an eyebrow.
"A lord? Well, technically, I suppose. Like me? I think not. There are lords, boy, and there are lords."
"I'd be careful, Meridas," a new voice said, coming from behind Marin. "That young man is a shard-bearer. Another insult or two, and I'd say he had legal grounds to challenge you to a lethal duel." Marin froze. Meridas? He had heard that name before. Meridas was the king's counselor, a very important man. Marin turned to glance behind. The newcomer was a much younger nobleman, perhaps 5 or 6 years Marin's senior. The man stood leaning against a pile of packing crates a short distance away. His hair was light, his body lean and tall, and his sea-silk shirt light blue against a darker blue cloak.
"Why, if it isn't Lord Arador,"
the nobleman Meridas said with an indifferent raise of the eyebrows. "Lord Arador, heir to Kolinar, son of Parshan, Dalinar, and cousin to the king." Marin realized with discomfort that this was the closest he'd ever stood to such noble blood. And he was about to get much closer. Arador strolled over, placing a familial hand on Marin's shoulder.
"Really, Meridas, show some respect. We owe a great debt to Lord Marin. He saved the king's life, after all. Where were you when His Majesty was in danger, Meridas?" "Oh, wait, that's right. You aren't a shard-bearer. You are hiding back on the tower.
Lord Meridas did not rise to the insult. His face remained calm, his head nodded slightly as if to concede Arador the point. His three companions, all younger men, were far more excited. Oddly, they didn't seem angered by the newcomer's insults, but instead seemed eager to speak with him.
"Oh, we've heard of Lord Merrin," one of them said quickly. "We didn't recognize the lad, that is all."
"Lord Merrin? Why, they're telling stories about him already."
"Indeed," another said. "And, if I might say, my Lord Arador, they're also speaking of your own bravery. Is it true you bested yet another shard-bearer on the battlefield?"
Meridas glanced at his companions with dissatisfaction. The three, however, seemed too excited by the prospect of earning Arador's favor to notice the disappointment. Arador just smiled.
"Afraid I don't have time to talk about my bravery at the moment, Lord Valna. Lord Merrin is desperately needed at the royal complex. Good day, Meridas."
Arador turned, steering Merrin by the shoulder and walking away from the group of noblemen, chuckling to himself.
"Lord Arador,"
Merrin said, glancing over his shoulder.
"Please," Arador cut in.
"No lords. We're both practically the same rank, which, by the way, is a far step above dear Meridas back there, despite the king's fondness for him. With all his wealth, he's only a 17th lord, which puts you 12 ranks above him."
"He didn't seem to see it that way," Merrin noted.
Arador rolled his eyes.
"Meridas is about as snobbish a lord as you'll ever find. But don't be bothered by him. In court, you'll have to get used to people looking across the breeze at you. Eventually, you'll realize that they're the only truly harmless ones. I'm more interested in hearing how you managed to get all the way up here. Last we heard, you were resting in the healer's tent."
"I was,"
Merrin explained, still a little uncomfortable. Arador was cousin to the king. Even amongst noblemen, he was a very important person.
"They told me I could leave, as long as I checked back with them tonight."
"Well, that's good then," Arador said, "because I really am supposed to take you to the royal tents." Merrin paled.
"The king wants to see me?"
Arador snorted.
"I doubt Elokar knows your name or even remembers you were given a shard blade. No, you're going to meet with someone far more impressive."
"More impressive than the king?"
"Who?"
Merrin asked.
"My father."
Lord Dalinar Colin had once been described to Merrin as the noblest man in all of Alethkar. Standing before the Parshan, Merrin could finally understand what those words had meant. Dalinar was large and muscular, despite his age, with arms like stone and a chest broad as a boulder. Yet there was nothing oafish in his air. He stood with an innate majesty, his eyes wise, his voice calm and stately. He wore his armor, even though there was no danger of battle, and over the glistening silver, he wore a regal cloak of the deepest blue with the symbol of his house on the back. It was a large coal glyph, the symbol that meant power. But it had been designed with flowing lines and broad wings as if blown upon the winds themselves. It was subtly different from the king's own house glyph, though the two were similar enough to indicate the familial relationship. Dalinar spoke with a small group of older men in militaristic cloaks. They were graying and reflective. Merrin thought he recognized several of them by description, generals in Lord Elokar's army. Lord Dalinar's tent had already been disassembled, and his possessions sat in neat piles ready for the packmen. The Parshan noticed Merrin almost immediately.
"Excuse me, my lords," he said. "There is a matter to which I must attend."
The generals nodded, walking off to their separate duties as Dalinar approached Merrin. Arador patted him on the shoulder, then withdrew, leaving him to speak with the Parshan alone.
"I see you have recovered from the knock to your head, Lord Merrin," Dalinar noted.
"Yes, my lord," Merrin said uncomfortably. "Thank you."
I believe I have reason to give you thanks, lad,
Dalinar said.
You did your kingdom a true service on the battlefield yesterday.
Meryn flushed.
My lord, you show me too much honor. I don't deserve this. I wanted to ask someone about that. I think there's been a mistake. Someone else should have this shard blade, not me.
Dalinar shook his head, a bit of the formality leaving his face.
No, I think it well placed. During this war I have seen a number of shard-bearers fall. Most were killed in duels with other shard-bearers. Several were killed by archers, and a couple of others were slain by teams of shardless noblemen. Only one was killed by a spearman.
Dalinar paused, leaning forward, laying a hand on Meryn's shoulder.
I stood helpless as my king was about to die, Dalinar said quietly. You saved him. Citizen or lord, shard-bearer or common duelist, I have rarely seen such bravery in all my years.
Meryn
trailed off, uncertain how to respond.
Thank you, my lord.
Dalinar clapped him on the shoulder.
Traditionally, a citizen made into a lord is assigned a house by the king. This is His Majesty's decision, but he has given it over to me. I would be proud if you would join my house and serve me in Kolinar.
Your house, my lord?
Meryn asked, stunned.
Yes, Dalinar explained. House Kolin is a proud and majestic line, Meryn. A royal line. You would become Meryn Kolin, a ward in my house, expected to follow my leadership and rise to my call when war is unavoidable. As compensation, you will receive the standard stipend of an attendant shard-bearer and will become a member of my court.
Meryn looked up. For the first time since waking, he felt like he knew exactly what to do.
I would be honored, my lord.
Dalinar smiled.
I take that as an oath, Meryn Kolin. You must honor it as you would honor your own life. More so, even, for your oath as a shard-bearer is your oath to the kingdom itself.
He paused.
Sometimes it may force you to do things that are difficult.
I understand, my lord, Meryn said.
Good,
Dalinar said, standing up straight. He reached up and undid the clasp to his cloak, then pulled off the luxurious deep blue garment and held it out to Meryn.
It is traditional to present a newly sworn shard-bearer with a gift. This cloak bears the glyph of my house, which is now your house. Wear it with pride, and let it remind you of your duty.
Meryn balked at first, but he looked into Dalinar's sincere eyes and knew this was not a gift to be rejected. He reached out, taking the garment in his hand. It was soft and smooth, yet heavy in its thickness, and had the slight reflective sheen of sea silk. Perhaps it was the moment, but Meryn thought that he had never seen a color quite so beautiful or brilliant as its warm sapphire. Meryn looked up from the cloak.
My lord, I'm not sure that the others will accept me as a nobleman. The men of my squad seemed uncertain how to treat me, and the noblemen I spoke with don't seem to consider me worthy of my title.
Dalinar nodded.
And they probably won't ever consider you worthy of it. You've entered a harsh world, lad. It shouldn't be so, but there are many who will dislike you. Some will even hate you.
Meryn frowned.
Don't let it bother you too much, lad, Dalinar said. That is just the way it is. You won't be able to make everyone like you. But if you keep your oaths, you might be able to make them respect you. Do what is right. Be honorable, even to your enemies. Study the way of kings. Have the monks read it to you often until you have it memorized. Remember what Lord Bajardin wrote. Nobility is service. Rank is a privilege, not a right. Do these things, Meryn, and even the jealous ones will admire you.
Yes, my lord.
Dalinar smiled, clapping him on the shoulder.
Don't be so nervous, lad. My sons will watch out for you. Go report back to Arador. He will see you cared for and trained in the ways of your new station.